support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants. Since 1985, offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. To make it through the slush, the freezing rain, it takes some pluck. You have to shovel snow a lot. Sometimes your car gets stuck. And wet and cold, you can conclude that you are out of luck with nothing to look forward to except the dropping puck. Yeah, doggerel, eh?
I love it.
Here to help us distinguish.
You
gotta let me finish the intro here, Helene, or we won't know who you are. All right. Having just nominated me for Poet Laureate of the NHL, here to help us distinguish the NHL's top points winners from the league's pointless is our antidote to winter, Helene Elliott, the LA Times scrappy scribe of the snowplow and Only a Game's femme de face-off. Welcome back to Only a Game,
Thank
Helene.
Thank you. Femme de face-off. I like that better than Mistress of Misconduct.
Oh, I was going to trot Mistress of Misconduct out at the end, and now I can't do it. All right.
Oh, spoil the surprise.
That's
Archie.
Okay. Let's start this time with the Eastern Conference. The team that's been atop the Southeast Division much of the season, the Tampa Bay Lightning, is a bit of a surprise, no?
Oh, absolutely. But I think it just proves to you the value of goaltending in this game. I think a good goaltender, as Nikolai Habibulin has been proving himself to be, makes a lot of coaches look like geniuses. I mean, the value of goaltending cannot be underestimated in this game, and he's had a terrific start. You look at some of the younger guys they have there. Le Cavalier has had a terrific start. And remember, this is a kid who a few years ago was burdened with the expectations of having his owner say he's the next Michael Jordan of hockey. I mean, you know, that's really completely unfair. But he has somehow survived that and managed to thrive.
The Boston Bruins have endured much criticism and absenteeism from the fans, much of it stemming from the team's early exit in the playoffs last year, unwillingness to re-sign several top free agents. But should we be surprised? The Bruins are, right now as we speak, the league's best team.
I think the interesting thing there has been the development of Joe Thornton. You know, you forget when you watch the NHL draft that the kids that these teams are picking are 18 years old, and there's absolutely no way to know how they're going to mature physically and emotionally. You know, Thornton was picked a high pick in 1997, and it's taken him this long to really get it, to realize that you've got to be a professional, to realize the effort that is required to get through a season, to realize that he can be a leader, and to be comfortable as a leader. And that's just been the most amazing revelation of this season. Everybody's been talking about Thornton and how he's really stepped up this season.
Another Eastern team which is not exactly packing fans into their building, despite a fine record, is the Philadelphia Flyers. What's wrong on Broad Street?
I think if you look around the entire NHL, you'll see a lot of places that are half full or that announce crowds of like 11,000, which means that there's probably about 8,500 in the building. And even though attendance in the NHL traditionally picks up after Christmas, I think it's just gotten to the point where ticket prices are just too high. People don't want to have to choose between paying their mortgage and going to a hockey game, and I can't blame them.
In the Western Conference, Detroit, the current Stanley Cup champion, is strong, as is Dallas after a short absence from the league's elite. Is it too soon to predict a Red Wings Stars conference final?
I'm looking for the Red Wings to be there in the end. It's just so impressive what this team has done, even without Steve Yzerman, who has a serious knee injury and isn't even expected back until January or February. And they've been telling him, hey, don't rush back. And that's very smart, because why put pressure on him to perhaps come back before he's ready? This team is so mature. They're so intelligent. They know how to parcel out their energy. They know when to get rolling. They've been playing very well lately. And they know they have to build up to it. You can't just kind of turn it on in March and April, but they're starting to get there. I like Dallas, too, though. I really like the coach, Dave Tippett. He was an assistant coach with the Los Angeles Kings for several seasons before he took over as coach in Dallas this year. And he's smart. He's patient. He's got players liking communication. He's communicating with them and treating them like human beings, which wasn't always the case with the previous coach. I mean, Ken Hitchcock had been there and kind of he has a very tough style and abrasive style. That's not always bad, but I think players had kind of gotten worn out by hearing him for so long.
Absent from talk about the best of the West is Colorado. The Avs won it all only 2 years ago. Head coach Bob Hartley says he's not worried. Should he be?
I think so. You're looking at a lineup that's essentially their regular lineup. You can't say, so-and-so is missing and this one is gone and all that. I mean, Forsberg has been out a little bit, but not for a prolonged period of time. Just Sakic is healthy. You got to look at this team and go, wait a minute, we're not getting goals from people that we should be getting goals from. They've got some problems, and I would not be surprised to see Pierre Lacroix, their general manager, make a big trade just to shake things up.
Helene, there's been a fair amount of talk about the National Hockey League's collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association. The deal still has 21 months to run. Why the talk now? Why the hurry?
Because it's never too early to start posturing. And to start campaigning in the press, even though Gary Bettman says that's not what he's doing. And, he visited the offices of major newspapers and TV stations across North America the first few months of the season. And when I wrote that he was out there on the campaign trail, kind of like Al Gore, I got a very irate call from the NHL saying, well, Gary was out and around and people just happened to ask him about the collective bargaining agreement. Yeah, right. Everybody's anticipating that this is going to be a nasty fight, and there is no question that there has to be some kind of restructuring in this league. The NHL is the only major professional sports league without a salary cap. There is going to have to be some kind of accommodation here in terms of, so many teams have new arenas. There isn't that many more sources of income that they can exploit. But they can't afford these huge payrolls. And when you're getting third and fourth line guys who are being paid $5 million a year, there's just no way it's all going to work.
And all this, of course, is especially true if some of those half-full arenas don't begin to fill up after Christmas, as you and other hockey fans hope they will.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just about every team in the NHL has a new arena except for Pittsburgh and the Islanders. And, they've got all the luxury boxes that they said they needed to make profits, yet now they're still pleading poverty. Where is the money going to come from?
Helene Elliott is the L.A. Times top shelf translator and our regent of the roofed biscuit. Thank you, Helene.
Thank you.
So lower your high stick and remember jolly old.
Among the top half dozen or so most successful teams in the NBA's early going has been the Hornets, buzzing around the top of the Central Division, as it were. Shortly after the then Charlotte Hornets crashed out of the NBA playoffs in May, the NBA was making plans to transfer the team from the Queen City to the Crescent City. The Hornets are happy about their new home, as who wouldn't be? It's New Orleans. Greg Eklund has this report.
By the sound of it, this could be the pregame warm-up at any NBA venue in the country. That is, until the smell of jambalaya wafts into the stands from the concession area. And you know you're at New Orleans Arena, home of the recently displaced Hornets.
Charlotte's a good town, but, New Orleans, Charlotte's like night and day.
That's Hornets forward P.J. Brown, who ought to know since he grew up in Louisiana, played college basketball at Louisiana Tech, and pro ball in Charlotte for two seasons.
This town is always buzzing. It's like a mini New York, like a mini, metropolitan city, compared to New York, Miami, L.A., and it just has a lot going on, a lot of things to do. So, friends and family, your boys, they come down. They know they can find a good dinner to eat. They can find a good club to go to and just have fun. So.
Brown claims he won't be among the French Quarter revelers after the Hornets play a New Year's Eve home game. It's more exciting, he says, for family members and friends that the Hornets are playing at a city with more joie de vivre. Brown's teammate George Lynch agrees. He was here at the Final Four as a member of the 1993 NCAA champion North Carolina Tar Heels.
All I saw was the practice floor and the meeting rooms and the restaurants we ate in. We didn't really get an opportunity to enjoy the Final Four because we were down here trying to win it. But the experiences that my family had, telling me that it was a blast, everyone was partying.
With or without the Hornets, New Orleans never stops partying. but a certain esprit de corps has developed among the locals now that an NBA team is back for the first time since the Jazz left for Utah in 1979. Fans are mixed on whether the team nickname should be returned to New Orleans.
I'd like it for it to be more in tune with the city, but Hornets is fine, you know.
We need a Jazz name back.
We need a Jazz name back.
That's our name. Ain't no Jazz in Utah.
Do a lot of people agree with you on that?
You know what? A lot of people do. They do, but I guess because of the way that they left, nobody ever really thought about it, but we need a Jazz name back. That's our name. That is our name. We need that name back.
Keep the Hornets name. The Jazz is associated with Utah. They've been in Utah too long. Utah can keep that name. We got the Hornets going on here, and we're going to keep the Hornets.
Though the color teal isn't omnipresent here as it was in Charlotte, the team feels welcome in New Orleans. In fact, Hornets head coach Paul Silas says the move came as a relief to his team.
I continue to say I kind of liken it to a kid that his parents are going through a divorce. He has nothing to do with it, but it certainly affects him. And that's what we felt in Charlotte last year. And coming here was like a dark cloud had lifted. We were welcomed everywhere you went. They wanted you to come in and be a part of the community. And it's just been overwhelming to me. The fan support at the games, it's just been phenomenal.
It helps that New Orleans is getting a team considered to be a strong contender in the Eastern Conference. The expansion Jazz of the 70s never had a winning season before the move to Utah. All in all, the arrival of the Hornets has created a buzz around town that the team and its fans hope will carry from New Orleans Arena to Bourbon Street and beyond. For Only a Game, I'm Greg Eklund in New Orleans.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. Of an evening, Mrs. Sandra Fry is wont to visit Castle Bingo in Bridge End, South Wales. So is her neighbor, Ms. Lynn Want, who apparently fried Mrs. Fry by sitting in the seat Mrs. Fry wanted. Mrs. Fry claimed she received verbal abuse from Ms. Want, and the ensuing melee resulted in fisticuffs. "I just don't know where it came from," Mrs. Fry said, "but I lifted my hand and hit her. I broke her nose in two places." Mrs. Fry said as soon as the incident happened, she regretted it. "You don't go to bingo to fight," she said. "You go to have fun and enjoy it."
Bingo Master's bright out! Bingo Master's bright out! Bingo Master's bright out! All it saves is a back of chairs in the mirror, a lack of hair.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. For the latest news from the sports world, go to WBUR.org, then click on News, then Sports. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Trader Joe's, a unique grocery store where buyers travel the world to find products like French rack of lamb, New York-style cheesecake, and heat-and-eat hors d'oeuvres. More at TraderJoe's.com. Well Space in Cambridge, celebrating 5 years of natural health at the Fresh Pond Mall in Cambridge, offering corporate and individual holiday gift certificates for massage and more at wellspace.com. And Sophos Antivirus, presenting a complimentary live online seminar on network antivirus protection, December 17th at 1 p.m. Registration details available at sophos.com. The forecast calling for a rainy Saturday, highs in the mid-40s, cloudy with a chance of rain tonight, lows in the upper 30s. And tomorrow, partly sunny, highs in the lower 40s. Sunday night turning colder, cloudy with a chance of snow showers. In Boston now, it's 45 degrees.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Ahead on Only a Game, a Division II women's basketball team in Minnesota has a record streak halted and couldn't be happier. But first,
and now someone will have to take a look at Gilbert Brown. 6'2", 339, the 9-year player out of Kansas, is down and injured.
At 339 pounds, Gilbert Brown of the Packers is a big lineman. He used to be an even bigger one. He's dropped about 70 pounds since the days when he essentially ate himself out of the National Football League. At 400 pounds, Brown had very little company in terms of his size, but there are currently about 320 players in the NFL who weigh more than 300 pounds, up from 67 just a decade ago. a development that must seem remarkable to some of the former pro players for whom the presence of a teammate that big was a novelty. Hall of Fame defensive back Yale Larry, who played 8 seasons with the Detroit Lions, recently recalled a problem faced by a lineman named Les Bingaman.
In the training room, we weighed in every Tuesday, I believe it was, and our scale just went to 300 pounds, and they couldn't weigh him in the training room, so they'd take him down to the dock and put him on the scale down there where I think he weighed about 350 at that time.
Bingaman would not stand out in the locker room of an NFL team today, and nobody equipping such a facility would be dumb enough to buy a scale that stopped at 300 pounds. The increase in the size of the players is a trend that has taken a frightful toll. Everybody playing football or any other contact sport constantly runs the risk of injury, of course. People banging into each other, especially when one or both of the people are huge, are bound to tear cartilage and ligaments, damage joints, and break bones. Roger Brown, who played defensive tackle for the Detroit Lions and Los Angeles Rams between 1960 and 1970, recently encountered some evidence of the damage done in the practice of his trade when he attended the funeral of former Baltimore Colt Johnny Unitas.
And his teammates looked like the walking wounded. I mean, the guys could hardly walk out of the church. Jim Parker, a guy that I had more trouble with than Carter got liver pills, could hardly get out of that church, and it was kind of sad to see him that way. And it was. Think of a guy that big and that fast and that tough. And then to look at him today, and I mean, they had Artie Donovan was there, and he was limping. And all these guys were really limping, and this heavyweight's going to come back to haunt him later in life when you really need some good pins.
The pins, whether at the hips or the knees or both, go bad because increased weight puts stress on joints, cartilage, and ligaments, which, as former Seattle Seahawks team physician Pierce Scranton explains, aren't meant to carry that weight.
The articular cartilage of a 100-pound, 5'2" woman is no different than the articular cartilage of a 340-pound offensive lineman who collides with another 300-pound defensive lineman, and that cartilage will not sustain that type of impact on a repetitive basis. It will damage it permanently.
For men who play football at 300, 350, even 400 pounds, the near certainty of damage to their joints is temporarily outweighed by the advantage their size provides them in the work they do, pushing other big guys out of the way or keeping them from reaching the quarterback. Get bigger, you can do those things more effectively. In the locker room of the New England Patriots recently, where several spirited dominoes games were in progress, I asked 300-pound offensive lineman Joe Andrusi, who grew up in Staten Island and played his college football at Southern Connecticut State College, how he sustained his weight. "We just eat more," he told me, and they do. Each day they eat 3 to 5 times as many calories as most American men do, and then, according to Joe Andrusi, they reach for additional help.
Yeah, I mean, there's more stuff out there that, you know, that can make you bigger, stronger, faster. I mean, there's a lot of supplements people take, but, you know, just one of those things that, you know, people try and get bigger, faster, stronger, and it makes you look, you know, what's going to help you be a better athlete.
A better athlete, or at least a more employable athlete, in terms of current NFL expectations, but not necessarily a healthier individual. Former Lion Roger Brown, who now runs a sports bar in Portsmouth, Virginia, is among those impressed by the size of the offensive lineman in the NFL today. His coaches were less inclined to reward bulk.
When I played, I could have very easily have been as big as they are, because I love to eat. And back when I played, we had to sit at a table so the coaches could look over what we ate. And we each had a weight to come in at. If you were over that weight, you were fined. In fact, I got fined. One year, I was fined so much they bought TVs for the whole team.
Though he's had 5 knee operations, Roger Brown might have been more fortunate than he realized. In these days, when an offensive lineman has to weigh 300 pounds or more to hold on to his job, coaches are worrying about how the guy's going to maintain his size rather than asking him to slim down. It's a trend that troubles former Seattle Seahawks team physician Scranton.
To some extent, the competitiveness of the business is creating a super freak. And as a consequence of that, there more likely than not will be major health events which will really give pause. I mean, I know of three people who were coaches for the Seattle Seahawks, you know, in the years that I was with them, who in their 40s and early 50s dropped dead on the racquetball court or had a heart attack carrying groceries out of their car on a cold morning, you know, up the hill. And these were people that, you know, gosh, I mean, when you think about it, age 45 or age 53, you're almost really in the prime of your life in terms of fulfillment and enjoyment and, you know, family and everything else. So to me, it was a real tragedy to lose these people. And there are probably literally hundreds, if not thousands, of NFL coaches and NFL players who have suffered similar fates.
In fact, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health study, released in 1994, concluded that pro football's linemen had a 52% greater risk of dying from heart disease than the average male. Since that study, the average lineman has gotten bigger at a considerably greater rate than has the average male, and according to Dr. Scranton, it's not easy for the men at risk to decrease that risk when they leave football.
You know, look how difficult it is for people, for example, to quit smoking. And even if you throw in, you know, the nicotine substitute things, they can't because they have an ingrained habit. So you get someone through high school, college, and in the NFL who is used to ingesting 6,000 to 10,000 calories a day to maintain weight and to build weight and speed. It is very difficult to just shut that off and suddenly say, oh, okay, I'll be healthy now. I'm going to really cut back and I'm going to eat vegetables and fruit and we'll eat lots of fish.
In the cafeteria at Curry College in Milton, Massachusetts, where the football team has been coached for the past few years by former NFL linebacker Steve Nelson, three times an All-Pro, the coach expresses no surprise at the fact that the pro linemen are getting bigger. The players are bigger even before Nelson begins recruiting them.
But I would say there's a real emphasis even on high school now to get big. And you know, the drive for scholarships, all the camps that are available, all the universities that have their summer camps that invite players to go there, and they are measured and they are timed and they do lifting and all these different gauges to see how good you are or your potential. So one of them, absolutely is size. And if you get an offensive lineman who is 6'4", 300 pounds, versus one that's 6'4", 250, you know, that's going to weigh in the decision whether to give a scholarship or not.
None of the 75 or so players on Coach Nelson's Division III team is likely to play professional football. Still, at the beginning of the season, there were three 300-plus-pound linemen on his roster. Evidence, says Nelson, of a trend that's trickled down from the NFL.
And if there's a 400-pound football player that can move, that can do his job, he will play. And he'll probably be very successful being 400 pounds.
Regardless of what might happen to him when he gets to be 35, 40, 45 years old.
Yeah, sure. It's all based on winning. You know, in that league, that there is no security with players, and there is a little more now with free agency and you can move, but you know, they could cut you in a week and you're gone.
At one of Curry's practices before the team's final game of the season 3 weeks ago, Ryan Kroll, a 6'1", 300-pound freshman offensive lineman, confirmed what Coach Nelson had said.
They like the size, and they also like me to get quicker. My offensive line coach, Coach Lee, said he wants me to drop like 10, 20 pounds. He's like, just get quicker, and that's it. He's like, even if you keep the weight and be quick, that's fine. That's like a perfect offensive lineman.
Ryan Kroll and one of his fellow linemen, Eric Leonard, who said he played his high school football at 305 pounds, acknowledged that already their ankles and knees sometimes gave them problems. They're both 18. Of their older, bigger, more damaged brethren in the National Football League, Dr. Pierce Scranton will not despair. He hopes that at some point during the escalation of size and accumulation of damage, those in charge of the league will respond.
It's almost like handicapping the Indy 500, you know, where, you know, faster and faster eventually they said, you know what, we're going to institute some rules concerning tire size and engine size and horsepower, and because otherwise, it would be catastrophe. And I think that what will happen is that the NFL and the Players Association will eventually work collaboratively on this and say, here's the deal, we're going to have a weight restriction.
Maybe so. Though the jump from cutting the speed of race cars with restrictor plates to disqualifying football players for being too heavy would seem to be considerable. Cars can't file lawsuits. Disqualified linemen almost certainly would, demanding their right to earn, briefly, a good living, even at the expense of a healthy life and a normal lifespan. On Tuesday night, the University of Minnesota Morris women's Division II basketball team beat Crown College 56-40. It was the first time the Cougars had won in nearly 3 years, a period over which the losing streak had reached 72 games. No team in any division in NCAA history had ever been so unsuccessful for so long. Joining me now on the line from the campus of Minnesota Morris is the victorious coach, Jim Hall. Coach Hall, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks for having me on today.
Listen, I hope Cougar fans aren't celebrating the win the same way Ohio State fans celebrate their football team's victories.
I don't think that's much of a problem around here, so we tend to be a little more reserved in these parts.
What has been the response on campus to breaking the longest ever losing streak?
Well, I think it's been positive. The administration has sent their regards over and congratulations and so on, and I know that especially the athletes around campus, you know, they've all taken time to make sure that they've told the ladies congratulations, and they've shared that with me as well. So, you know, everybody's pretty upbeat about it. I think folks around town, our paper doesn't come out until today. It only comes out twice a week, so they'll find out today that we won. So I think it'll be pretty positive around here the next couple of weeks. So
I understand that this is your first year coaching the team. Is this kind of like a president taking office during a depression and things can only get better?
Well, it's probably something similar to that. You know, a lot of people probably wouldn't look at this position and say, boy, that's someplace I want to go. But, you know, when I looked at it, I said, hey, you know, there's a lot of opportunity and potential there for someone who wants to come in and work hard and do some good things. And so I looked at that and said, I think it's worth the opportunity and worth the chance of taking it. So
your predecessors must have had a real challenge recruiting.
Yeah, it's not been easy. I know that I face a lot of the same things that they do, except I've got a little something extra to build on in the fact that we're going to make the switch to Division III next year.
Well, you've got something else to work on. You won.
Yeah, that's right. Always good to build off that, although we tend probably not to talk about our win-loss record a whole lot in our recruiting process. So.
Well, what I want to know, you've got another game tonight, first game since the victory. Is there a chance that you look up off the bench and see huge banners saying, make it two in a row? I mean, this is the first time they've had a chance to make that kind of banner out there in a while.
Well, you know, I did say something to my junior who has stuck it out through 60 of the 72 losses, and I said, you know, you've got a chance for a winning streak now. And she goes, winning streak? What's that? You know, so I tried to get out the dictionary and show her what a winning streak was. But, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of anxious to see what the fans come up with tonight, and I'm hoping that there'll be a pretty good crowd and cheer us on to hopefully what'll be victory number two.
Jim Hall is the women's basketball coach at the University of Minnesota Morris. His team plays Northwestern College tonight. Coach, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Only a Game. Old Pete, he was a gambling rose, of that there was no doubt. And so Bart Giamatti shrugged and threw the bum on out for life, which, as we've learned, means not exactly life. Instead, Pete Rose was out of baseball till he got it through his head that he had to apologize for betting on the game. Apologize to whom? Well, here the deal starts sounding lame. Apologize to guys who rigged the market and got caught? The owners cheating players who'd have otherwise been bought? Apologize to fans? The fans don't care that Pete Rose bet. They love him anyway, and they deserve just what they get. Inflated prices, TV hype, and owners crying poor and saying their new stadiums aren't working anymore, and they need newer ones. They know the fans won't let them down, and if they do, they'll move, they say, to someone else's town. So is Pete coming back because he's changed his low-down ways? Has he turned honest, clean, and upright, bound for brighter days? Or is he back because poor baseball needs another story, A winter's tale of brave redemption, something full of glory to let folks know these football days that baseball in the news is still the game they need to chase away those winter blues. Forgive me if I skeptically believe that Pete and Bud have met to wipe away from Pete's tail all the spattered mud because Pete, tired of hawking junk, is looking now for work. The Reds could use a manager, and Bud, though he's a jerk, has seen the polls that say that fans think Pete did nothing wrong. So who needs baseball's cardinal rule? Old Pete's been out too long. And now he'll be a story of grace wrenched from darkest sin. Who can resist at Christmas time? Hello, Pete. Come on in.
Remember Joe Morgan, Perez, and Pete Rose, Concepcion, Foster, and Geronimo. The bet that played baseball, you know who I mean. Down at Riverfront Park, spark the big red machine.
You can share your comments with Only a Game by writing to us, care of WBUR-FM, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or by emailing oag@wbur.bu.edu. Please let us know on which station you hear Only a Game and how to pronounce your name. You can leave comments on our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. You can visit Only a Game's website at www.onlyagame.org.
I sit down for baseball, I go to a game. I'll see heart in a player and shout out his name.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR in Boston, where Only a Game is produced, and from the other NPR member stations airing this program. Additional support comes from Thermo Electron, the scientific instruments company with a mission to advance drug discovery, improve manufacturing, and protect people and the environment, on the web at thermo.com. And from Nutter, McLennan, and Fish, working to solve critical legal issues on local, national, and international levels. Information at Nutter.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Toyota, featuring the Toyota Prius, the four-door hybrid gas-electric-powered sedan, available at a New England Toyota dealer during their Toyotathon year-end event. The Christmas Revel, celebrating the holidays with 18 performances through December 29th at Sanders Theater in Cambridge. Tickets and details at revels.org. And by Sophos Antivirus, presenting a complimentary live online seminar on network antivirus protection, December 17th at 1 p.m. Registration details available at sophos.com. Good morning, I'm Bob See, and in sports headlines, Antoine Walker had a season-high 33 points as the Celtics held off the Cleveland Cavaliers 115-100 last night. It was Boston's seventh straight win over the Cavaliers. The Boston Bruins look to end their first two-game losing streak of the year tonight in Montreal, and the Patriots are getting ready for their Monday night game against the Tennessee Titans in Nashville. And Red Sox new general manager Theo Epstein says team stars Nomar Garciaparra, Pedro Martinez, and Manny Ramirez aren't going anywhere. He says the chances of a blockbuster deal involving one of the three is, quote, very, very small. Make all your holiday purchases at the public radio store at WBUR.org, where for a limited time you can save $50 or more on select handhelds, Compact, Palm, Toshiba, and Sony. That's the public radio store at WBUR.org, where every purchase helps pay for the news. The forecast calling for rain today, highs in the mid-40s. In Boston now, it's 45 degrees.
I'm Dick Gordon. Join me, Tom Ashbrook, Dolores Handy, Ted O'Brien, Michael Goldfarb, and Alice Furlow for a reading of Dickens' special adaptation of A Christmas Carol. That's tonight at the Sci Center in Boston. We'll also enjoy some old English carols sung by Syncopation from the Berklee College of Music. The evening's presented in association with Frugal Fannies. All proceeds will benefit Rosie's Place. Tickets are available at the door or call 617-442-9322.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, gifts for the sports enthusiasts on your no doubt all too slowly shrinking list. But first, the gift of sports news with Elfin analyst Charlie Pierce. Hello, Charlie.
What's that Elfin, pal? It's just a very low chair.
It just wouldn't be December without your by now famous radio pose.
Hang on, let me get into the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Heisman. Speaking of which, who will take a place today alongside Heisman Immortals Gino Toretta and Andre Ware?
I don't have any idea. I think it may finally come down to Ken Dorsey, the quarterback from Miami, based on the track record of that team over the last 2 years. But you can make a case certainly for Carson Palmer as being the most talented quarterback of the bunch. You can make a case for Larry Johnson of Penn State being the best running back of the bunch. And you can make a case for Brad Banks of Iowa being the most talented all-around football player of the bunch. But I think enough voters will have paid little enough attention that Ken Dorsey will squeak through and win the trophy.
The bowl game matchups have all been determined, and the first one, the New Orleans Bowl, will occur on Tuesday. Which of the 28 bowls that run from December 17th until January 3rd will you watch, and which ones will you leave alone?
Well, I'll certainly watch the Continental Tire Bowl because it's on my birthday, December 28th. Still plenty of shopping days left. But the outside of the national championship game, which I will watch Southern Cal and Iowa in, oddly enough, the Orange Bowl, because I just think that's a matchup of the two teams that at the end of their schedules were playing better than anybody else.
Among his other vital tasks during the offseason, Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig must determine if Pete Rose is a rose is a rose, or whether he remains a weed in baseball's garden and should be therefore excluded. What happens next? Does Rose get reinstated?
Here's $5, Bill. Go be a good guy and go out and buy me a ball-peen hammer so I can hit myself between the eyes. Boy, am I sick of this controversy. And, you know, I think that there will be some compromise found by which Pete Rose will somehow be eligible for election to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think it's ludicrous in the extreme to think that he'll be allowed to manage again, much less be a front office type within the institution of baseball. And I'm not entirely sure he wants that. But all the old ghosts came rattling out of the cupboard this week. John Dowd, the former investigator, comes out and tells the New York Post 13 years after the report was filed that we really had the smoking gun, but we didn't have enough time to, like, show it to the rest of the world. Selig has already told Dowd and one of his predecessors, Faye Vincent, just to shut up and get out of the way. I don't often say this. I give Bud Selig credit for trying to break the ice on this issue. I just wish he hadn't done it so publicly, and I just wish I didn't have to talk about it.
On Monday, two ownership groups, one headed by businessman Steve Belkin, the other by Black Entertainment Television founder Robert Johnson, will meet with the NBA's expansion committee to determine which will have the privilege of bringing NBA basketball back to Charlotte next season. Care to handicap that contest?
There was a couple of things going on. First of all, Steve Belkin is the candidate most closely tied to the group headed by Larry Bird, which gives him a leg up, I think, with old-school NBA guys. But I got to tell you, I think, you know, BET founder Robert Johnson, the television zillionaire and not the destitute blues man poisoned and buried God knows where in Mississippi, I think it may be his time. So I would give him just the slightest edge. I think the NBA is looking for minority ownership. I think he's certainly qualified. I think in either case, the people in Charlotte will be happy.
On Thursday, LeBron James of St. Vincent St. Mary High School in Ohio and his team upset the nation's number one high school basketball team, Oak Hill Academy of Virginia, by a score of 65-45. Has high school basketball finally arrived on primetime television, and should this be the case?
Look, let's get the obvious out of the way first. It is absurd to have a high school game on national television, much less to have the cream of ESPN's analytical crew there to talk about it. That having been said, this guy is really good. this guy was worth watching. This guy could go in and play in the National Basketball Association right now, and if John Lucas and the Cleveland Cavaliers could find a way to do it, he'd be playing next week in some arena near you. He's that good. He is that far advanced physically and mentally and in his conception of the game past any of the high schoolers that have come directly into the NBA.
James certainly was impressive, scoring 31 of his team's 65 points. But I can't help thinking that it's way too early to brand anybody, no matter how good he is, as a can't-miss NBA prospect. I mean, he's a kid.
Well, you know, at the same time, though, he's a year and a half older than Sarah Hughes was when she became an international celebrity at the Olympics. He's exactly the same age as Joe Thornton was when Joe Thornton played his first professional game with the Boston Bruins, and now Joe Thornton's probably the best player in the National Hockey League. So, I mean, it's only because you have this weird overlay of academic foo-for-aw in sports like basketball and football that there's even a debate as to whether or not this guy should be a professional.
Then there's Mozart. He was pretty good at that age.
He was very good at that. Not by 17. He was over the hill. But At 8, he was fabulous.
This week, Treasury Secretary nominee John W. Snow announced that he plans to resign as a member of Augusta National Golf Club. How can we expect the nation's economy to improve if Snow isn't out on the golf course taking care of business and doing business and that sort of thing?
If Hootie Johnson isn't noticing, the ground is moving underneath his feet. And this was the way it was going to happen. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It isn't the greatest time in history to be a captain of industry. When your public approval rating is down there milling around with lawyers and journalists, you've got real problems. There is going to be such an outcry among America's corporate class to get this thing solved before the tournament next year that Hootie's going to turn around and there's not going to be anybody behind him. I think this is the first indication, one of the first indications of that.
Finally, Charlie, this week, several Austrian drivers were delayed for hours when the Alpine wind blew artificial snow off course from a ski slope and onto a main highway. I don't understand why there would be a delay. Strap on the skis. Get going.
I'm dreaming of a polystyrene Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine and serves as sports mogul each week here on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
I'm not Elfin.
An otherwise entertaining and exciting National Basketball Association season has been marred recently by some of the worst officiating ever witnessed in a... Ah, gee, I don't want to get into this grumpy stuff during the holiday season. Let's move right along to the 9th annual Only a Game Holiday Gift Guide. Our first suggestion is a little on the specialized side, but for the outdoors person on your list, it may be perfect. Fishing and hunting lights from Larry Sellers of fishandgifts.com.
You got the black bass, you got fishing lure lights, perch lights, you got antique lure lights, shotgun shell lights. It's like shotgun holes with little lights in them.
I assume most of your customers are guys when they're buying these shotgun shells.
No.
No?
95% of my customers are women.
They like those fish?
No, they're buying it for their husbands, their boyfriends, the grandpas. See, that they want to buy them something that represents their favorite hobbies, you know.
The shotgun shell is a little, I have a little more trouble with that. I mean, I'm not sure shotgun shell says Christmas to me.
Yeah,
but not real shotgun shells.
No. And there's no primer or nothing in them. It's just got a little light inside of it.
Well, that's good, because primer in them, you get those lights hot enough, you'd have a real problem on your Christmas tree.
It'll light up, all right.
He's a rootin' tootin' Santa Claus and is on his merry way. He will round up all your Christmas dreams with a yippee-yo-ki-yay.
For those more inclined toward the pastoral at holiday time, the national pastime will never let us down.
My name is Jerry Degani, and the products are t-shirts that really commemorate baseball teams that have long been gone.
These are teams you've probably never heard of, no matter how carefully you've been listening to Only a Game. Teams like the Fever Germs, the Lumber Shovers, and the Forked Deers. But Jerry Degami has been surprised by which team T-shirt has been his biggest holiday season hit.
Bone Pilers. Bone Pilers, for some reason, seems very popular. And I'm surprised, because I would think that a Coal Heavers or a Dixie Runners might be more popular. But that's not the case. One day maybe the starch boxes will hit it big.
If you baseball fans on your list, you might also consider a game called Old Century Baseball. As the game's promoter, Steve Edmiston, says of his product, it's for folks tired of things that plug in, whistle, and glow.
Old Century Baseball looks like something right out of the 1930s or a 1940s arcade. You pull a plunger back and send the ball into the baseball stadium. You have a wooden flipper bat, and obviously you're trying to do what every baseball player tries to do, is hit it out of the park.
There's no batteries, right?
There's not a battery. In fact, the only high-tech thing about this game is the website we put up on the outfield wall. It's the only conceit that we have to the modern world.
My name is Jim, and I'm from RallyMonkey.com. We sell all kinds of Rally Monkey merchandise, the famous Rally Monkey from the Anaheim Angels.
Can any monkey aspire to be a rally monkey?
In fact, I've done some research, and all monkeys aspire to be the rally monkey, actually.
I wonder if this is going to bring out a whole raft of imitations. You know, are we going to see the rally giraffe and, you know, the rally turtle and stuff like that in other ballparks?
Yeah, I think they'll probably try doing it. I've also had a lot of interest from companies that do sales, use the rally monkey as a symbol that you can meet your goals even though you haven't sold anything in the whole quarter or whatnot.
Does it work?
I don't know. It works for me.
Always golfers have been easy to buy gifts for. That's because all golfers believe that if they can just find the right gimmick, their games will dramatically improve. A notion Andy Markopoulos is running with during the holiday season.
The WOW putter has all the features a putter ought to have. It's got a tape measure for accurate, convenient measurement, and the compass for ball hawkers lost in the woods. The horn is to improve your concentration and to ward off undesirable critters by a loud toot. And then it's got a level to eliminate scuffing. The rabbit's foot, basically we put that on there just as a backup when your morale is low. And it's just a great product for the golfer who thinks he has everything but doesn't.
Now, you don't happen to have a WOW putter right there with you, do you?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm hoping you could give me the sound of that horn.
The horn, that's the best part because we recommend that if you do, in fact, ace a hole, you want to do this real quick. So that everybody on the golf course can hear.
Especially the people who are at the top of their backswings.
You got it. We're excited about that.
Has the PGA made a statement about this putter?
They have, and pretty much probably the funniest putter they've ever seen.
My name is John Semmelhack. The Parscription Golf Ball Set is a set of six golf balls inside a actual prescription vial, and on the outside of the vial is a, quote, prescription label to your favorite golfer to help their putting game.
And are the prescriptions all the same?
The prescriptions are all the same. It says use daily to relieve stress, repeat as needed. The prescription is written by Dr. Putter.
There's light-hearted living and light-hearted ball staff. Life refreshing ball staff here in America.
If that advertisement sounds dated, that's because it is. It's part of a tape of a 42-year-old baseball game between the Angels and the Orioles that you can give a fan on your list.
Right, the windup, the first pitch of the season, and it's a strike right down the middle. Bullseye by Pappas with that fastball. Amazing.
Donna Girard of Holly Music has over 200 old games on tape, and the guy she got them from has over 10,000. A truly disquieting thought. Anyway, if somebody on your list wants to listen to old Orioles, old Mets, or old Angels, this being the Christmas season, Holly Music will take care of it. How about some remarkable sunglasses for a fan on your list? He or she can have a team logo on each lens and still be able to see. I asked marketeer Mark Liger how people respond to him when he's wearing the product.
Yeah, everybody kind of trips out on him. I'm a Bronco fan because I'm from Denver originally. I went out skiing last year and everybody says, oh, I can see that Bronco horse on your, can you see it? Is it blocking your vision? It looks like a sticker or something, but then you tell them to try it on, and they're like, whoa, these are really cool. You can't see it at all.
I'm glad you can see if you're skiing in them.
Yeah, well, you might go right off of a cliff or something. Otherwise, it won't be a Bronco fan anymore.
Finally, because everybody knows the holiday season is about not only peace, love, and giving, but great food, we want you to have the opportunity to give the gift that might get you back a great meal. And so we call on Gwen Ashley Walters, author of the Par Fork Golf Resort Cookbook, about which I admit I was initially skeptical because we talked about a National Football League cookbook in a previous gift guide, and all the recipes said, dump all the starch into a pot, then add sausage.
Well, you won't find those kind of recipes in my book.
No, this is different, right?
These are five-star resorts, and these are gourmet recipes. Like, my favorite recipe is the macadamia nut chicken breast with a lemon cream sauce. That's from the homestead. It's awesome.
Now, Gwen, I have to tell you, I'm flipping through the book, and I have found one recipe that might be comfortable in one of our previous books. Sausage cheese biscuits?
Oh. It might be, but you do make the biscuit from scratch.
Oh, okay.
You don't open up a can.
Pour in half a box of Bisquick.
Yeah, no Bisquick in this book.
All
no.
Right, I got it.
No.
I noticed that although many, I'm sure, very splendid resorts are included in this book, Augusta is not. Wouldn't they let you in?
Well, yes, they said I could, but I'd have to check with a few people first.
Merry Christmas to all, and to all equal access. Good eats, happy holidays, and may every gift you toss downfield be just what the receiver wanted.
From Coney Island to the Sunset Strip, somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give the cronies of the girls and boys all day. Santa comes on day.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. We had help this week from Andy Farnsworth. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. Our technical director of the past 2 years, Tad Curry, leaves us this week for a new high-tech job in the wilds of New Hampshire. May the Boreal software flow like sap in the spring. Thanks for everything, Tad. To order a tape of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll-free. CDs and cassettes are $15 post-paid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for our newsletter or learn more about our veritable cornucopia of silly sports swag, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from Melinda Simaco of the Lego Company, which this holiday season is offering tiny Legos in the likenesses of NBA stars. But that's not all.
We have in the past made a life-size bust of Shaquille O'Neal that's on display out at Legoland, California.
Were you wondering what to get that special someone? Well, now you don't have to wonder, assuming he or she has a great big living room. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
When the snow's the most, cats are sleeping warm as toast, and you gonna flip when the old Saint Nick plays a lick on the peppermint stick. He'll come a flying from the higher place, fill the stockings by the fireplace. So you ever use that good, ever use that good, yeah, cool yo.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is WBUR, Weekend Edition 7. This is WBUR, Weekend Edition 7.